Welcome, Mama. I'm your host, Tia of Begin Again Mama, and today I have a dear friend, Alex, joining me to talk about a taboo topic, death. And I want you to make the decision whether or not you can listen to this podcast today. It's talking about death and how our culture perceives it, and possibly changing how we decide to approach it and perceive it ourselves. We talk about things that are very personal, and we also leave it open to changing our minds on this topic and changing our perspectives. This podcast went a little longer than what we were expecting, but it was one of those topics that we had a hard time turning off once we started talking about it, because it just led us down this rabbit hole of how it's so interconnected to so many other things in our lives. And because we know death is ultimately the only guarantee in this life, we live our lives in a certain way, and we take care of ourselves and really prioritize the way we live and our lifestyles, our food choices, our medical advice and opinions and all of those things. And we kind of get into the depths of it in here. So if this is something that your heart, your soul is not ready for, I invite you to turn this podcast off. Otherwise, I invite you to just open your mind and heart and think of maybe your perspective on death and what it has been, what it is now, how it's been curated for you, what's been culturally conditioned into you, and what does your soul really think of it? Hi, Alex. I am so excited to be sitting down with you. I feel like we started to have this conversation probably a month ago now. It was before I moved, so a lot has happened. I'm glad to be here with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I'm glad you invited me.
So Alex and I met beginning of June, I think was your first meeting.
Yes, I believe that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Alex started a Good Grief support online meeting that has been just very fulfilling in my journey and very life-giving in a journey of grief and death that I didn't know I could have that type of community. After I experienced my sister's death, I searched for that kind of community, but I could not find what I was actually looking for. I did not find something that truly fit me. And so once Faye passed, having it just serendipitously fall into my life that I found your meeting even felt so aligned, and I was so grateful because it was just weeks after her passing that I got to join in with other moms who know loss and know death intimately with birth. And that felt comforting in its own way and has felt healing in its own way as well. So thank you so much for that, Alex. I would love to hear just a little bit about you and why you started the group, and then we can go from there.
Okay, great. Yeah, my name is Alex Cephalou. I'm on Instagram as AlliOxenFree. I'm traditionally trained as a speech pathologist here in Texas, but I haven't really practiced with that in a while. But that kind of led me down the feeding, breastfeeding rabbit hole, which of course is so tied in with the birth rabbit hole. And so that's how I found just more holistic options for birth and kind of just discovering what I wanted to do, what we wanted to do as a family before I even became pregnant. And then my husband and I, we had been married for maybe 3 or 4 months when we found out we were pregnant. And so just all of a sudden I had to make some of those decisions. And I think obviously there's a little bit of ingrained fear that society has given us and just put a layer of that on birth and even death and life. But I was like, hey, I want to do something different. And so that's why I started researching just more holistic birth practices, even like with a midwife. We ended up settling on doing a free birth just because I didn't really care for my options here regarding traditional midwives or going with a licensed midwife. work in like a hub where we have a lot of hospitals, but we only have one midwife here. And just exploring all of our options, I settled on free birth. We had a free birth and she was actually stillborn, and that was in 2022. And so for about a little over a year, I was a part of various support groups. And I started, I don't know, I just got a little frustrated with what was offered out there. We didn't really have anything local that I liked. We had like general grief share groups that weren't really niche focused on losing a child, which is a, it's just a different kind of grief. I'm sure you've experienced that with losing your sister and your daughter, but it's just a special, it's a special place. And I got frustrated by what was offered out there. There were a lot of virtual stuff, more virtual stuff than in person. And, but it was just so medicalized. And I don't know, I think a lot of birth workers would even tell you this, that just the medical system can even add to that trauma a little bit. And it was just hard for me to connect with a lot of these families that maybe didn't experience what I experienced, because whenever I would start talking, they'd be like, "What? You chose not to go to the hospital? That's weird. That's why your baby died." I think that's what a lot of people's thoughts go to. And because according to them, they did everything right. And according to me, I did everything right with a hands-off birth. And we both still experienced loss at the end of the day. I mean, you think that would connect us, but it was just, it's just hard. And so I really wanted to, I started using my Instagram as a way to talk about death. And you and I have talked about how it's just really taboo and people don't really like to, people don't like to admit that it's a, that it's a consequence of living for anybody, but especially babies. I think that's really hard. I think it's really hard for people to wrap their minds around. And I think it's just because life and babies and birth makes everybody happy. And that's what we're used to existing in. And so whenever something the opposite happens, I don't know, it's, we don't even know. It's like a malfunction operator error. You know what I mean? We don't even know what to do. And so I just wanted to create like that space within my Instagram and talk about the realities of life and birth and death and how they're all so intricately related. And then I also wanted to provide a space for like a support group for women and parents who maybe chose to do some things different in their pregnancies or in their births, still experienced losses, and just explore those hard topics too that come with radical responsibility in life and death and birth. So that's how it started. And yeah, I actually love talking about this stuff, which I think is also weird to some people. But I think it's what we've talked about, that the more we talk about death, I think the more we can really sit right with life, if that makes sense. Like the reality that death does exist makes life all the more precious. And I think people who experience grief can tell you that too. I read something recently and it was like, if you know somebody who's gone through profound grief, hold them close or keep them close. And I just think you can find some special friends in grief because of what they've gone through and that they have a completely different perspective on life. And I don't think it makes anybody better than anybody else, but just the things that they have to offer. I don't know. I found some of my greatest friends in grief. And yeah, that's how it started and that's how it's blossomed. And I'm excited to see where else it goes. But, and I'm glad you had me here to have this conversation about some uncomfortable topic points.
I'm so grateful that you're willing to talk about it because I also now really enjoy talking about it too, talking about the truth of life. And that is, we all have one guarantee coming into life, and that is death. That's our only guarantee. And if we're going to avoid it, it's going to make it that much harder when we experience it in our lives. And personally, death was something I wanted to avoid. I didn't want to talk about it, I didn't want to think about it. It wasn't something that was normalized, I think, for me before I lost my sister. And then once she died, of course I changed. But then the people around me, I realized their only goal was to avoid it, right? I was at my sister's funeral. My sister died about 8 weeks, 7 weeks after I got married. And so it was very quick. And at her funeral, I had countless people congratulate me. My mouth just dropped each time. It was so shocking. I'm like, congratulations for what? You are literally standing in the church attending my sister's funeral right now. I am at the front row and you are like supposed to give me your condolences and you are choosing to congratulate me on my marriage. That is insanity. And it also brought on a sense of shame for me of, oh my gosh, I forgot that I just got married. I forgot that I
Sure.
was a newlywed. And then I felt ashamed of that. Of course, my energy wasn't there. Like, my energy was solely on how do I live in this new reality without my sister? But the people around me were trying to pull me out of that. Like, my healing was done in that new reality. And so I feel like you do such a great disservice to pull people out of that reality. We are so uncomfortable as a society with death. We can't even show up for each other. And I think that's why it's hard to find the right support groups because people struggle with showing up for each other in death. And like you said, especially out of order death, right? Death is for the elderly, it's for the sick. It is not for the young, it is not for the healthy, it is not for the babies, especially. And the truth is, all species on this planet experience stillbirth. And no medical system can prevent that, stop that, or save that. And I think that we're not supposed to stop that. There is a part of certain people's soul's journey in this life that are supposed to experience that. I believe that we sign up for certain things, certain experiences in this life. And I don't know why we do that. I don't know why it comes towards us, but I think it is something that we need to fully experience. And if we aren't able to talk about it, how can we fully experience? How can we show up wholly in this life and live a full life if we're not willing to face the only certainty in this life?
Yeah. And even just like authenticity too, like just being your authentic. I don't know. I do feel like I've had to shelter my grief away from certain people who I don't feel like have been deserving of it or honoring of it. And so that's hard too, because that almost like it drains you to be real and it drains you to be honest and it drains you to be fully in your grief and just cry in any moment. But then it also drains you in another way to be like, oh yeah, I can go to this hangout with this group who won't really talk about or ask about my daughter. And but yeah, I think you're right. I think it's not only am I uncomfortable with a little bit with my grief, like I'm trying to get comfort with it, but all the people around you, they're like so uncomfortable with it and they don't want you to be sad. I think a lot of it does come down to care, but it doesn't feel that way, especially in the moment. But I think they're like they're so uncomfortable with seeing you uncomfortable and sad that it's what else can we offer? You know what I mean? Like, what else is there in life? I don't know. It's so hard because I think sometimes whenever you're in really deep grief, that is all, right? You're like, I can't get past this because it's right here. It's covering up everything. But I think whenever you would actually talk to us, we can realistically say, this isn't the end. We will smile again. We will have good things to celebrate. We do have good things to celebrate in the past. But yeah, them just trying to bring you out of that is so interesting. I've thought this for a while too, even thinking about like child rearing, and I'm sure you've experienced this too. Like, we say a lot of things before we even think about what we're saying. Like, we just throw words around, like, whenever we tell our children, be careful, or you share with everybody, or obey your elders. All those things are, I don't know, they're so automatic. But when you actually ask somebody, do you actually want them to do those things? Or I don't know, once you actually get into the layers of language, like you want to tell them like, oh, watch your step right there, not just be careful. I don't know. I just think people speak and they like don't even think about it, because if you press them on it, I think they'd say, oh yeah, that was so hurtful. I didn't mean to say that. But at Lila's memorial, somebody said, you're young, you can have more kids. And it's such like a, like in the moment, of course I wasn't going to be like, what a horrible thing to say, even though I wanted to. And she's right. I am young and I can have more kids. But that doesn't negate from my loss. And that doesn't necessarily give me something to look forward to, even though I know it is. And even if we do get pregnant, or even if we don't, nothing's going to pull me out of where I am right now. So just let me be. Let me marinate in this uncomfortable. But I think people are just, they don't want to be uncomfortable. They don't want you to be uncomfortable. But also it's that unnatural order we were talking about, because, and I've made this joke before, but nobody would say that to somebody at their mother's funeral. And I'm sure nobody said that to your sisters, like, oh, you can get another sister. And so I guess I technically
Can't,
could,
but
yeah.
also I can't replace this one.
That's right. That's not how it works. And it's so interesting because how dismissive is that of that person or that life? I'm sure you've experienced this with your sister too. Like, other people knew your sister. And so it's that hole is like in other people's lives, if that makes sense. A baby is weird. If you lose a baby during pregnancy or during birth, it's like nobody else really knew that person or that soul, even if you have pictures. Like, I love my brother to death, but he just doesn't. First of all, he's a guy, but he didn't really understand that I actually had to give birth to a baby that wasn't alive and they were actually physically here. Like, she was here, even though her soul was gone. I think we just think, oh, they're reabsorbed, or you know what I mean? We don't think about us having to actually birth a living being or a dead being.
That's so true, because even in what people would consider like a miscarriage, like you still give early birth, it's just not to the same body that you imagine birthing at the end of pregnancy.
Sure, yeah.
People
And
love,
miscarriage is so taboo too. It's so
yes,
crazy.
people love to shove that under their rug and move on as quickly as possible because it was early. It was this. It's no, it's still the death of the baby I foresaw in my future. It's the death
Yep.
of the future I was planning and the death of me in a way, right? You become a new person, birth or death, you become a new person and you're supposed to. But when somebody around you is trying to fix it with these little sayings of you can have another one, you can try again, at least you have XYZ, it's like when you're trying to fix it, it does just make you feel so unseen. It makes you feel a sense of shame of being like, oh gosh, maybe they are right. I shouldn't be this sad because at least. And then you can't be vulnerable with those people. Your relationship changes with those people so much. Like, it's not the same. You can't show up as your authentic self, and you definitely can't show up as your new self, because they need to fix it into your old self. And if you're not smiling as much as you used to, or you're not showing as much joy as you used to, they're going to try to pull you into that. And then you feel the pressure to fake it. And that
Yeah.
makes it hurt so much, too.
Yeah. And I think if you really did press them on it, like I think if you really did try to have a, maybe not everybody would be this way, but if you really tried to have a conversation with those people of, hey, like that's dismissive of my grief, or yeah, but that doesn't matter because I still lost this life and this life still requires reverence and adequate time before we move on or move with or whatever. I think if you actually were to have that conversation with them, they'd be like, oh, duh, you're right. I don't know why I said that. That's what's so funny. That's why I think it's like such a weird, that's why I think it's such a weird society thing. But it's not even sometimes an individual thing.
I'd
And
agree. Conditioned word vomit. Things we say to people in grief is conditioned word vomit. We don't even think about it. It's something that somebody said to us at some point, and it feels like the best thing to say because it's known in a way, right? Those sentences are known.
And I would say like my first experience with grief was actually a divorce that I had. And it's so interesting to see how different kinds of grief impact your life and how different things can grow you and stunt you, if that makes sense. And so, like entering into a new relationship, I see what wounds I have from my old one. And then entering into, I'm expecting again. And so, entering into that space to see what things Lila's experience really impacted in me. And so, just to explore all those different facets is so interesting. But whenever I first had my divorce, my husband, my ex-husband, he just up and left. Like he had been moving out for a week because I didn't realize. And he was like, I'm just done. I'm leaving. And when I first told people that, they were like it, like that unknown that happened made them so uncomfortable. And they would ask, what happened? Were there any signs? Or like, how'd you not know what? They would ask all these questions. And it was so interesting because it was a prying of my personal life. But it made them so uncomfortable that my answer was, I don't know. And I later was able to explore that. And I think a lot of that comes down to we think we have control. And they were saying, like, what happened to you so that I know what to look for if it happens to me? Like, it was kind
Can
of
I
like
avoid
a,
this?
yes, it was like a protective, like, how can I insulate myself from my husband just up and leaving? And at the end of the day, you really can't.
No.
And you want to hope that that doesn't happen. And I really do think my current husband would want to think that he would do it completely differently if he decided to leave me, that we would have a conversation, that we would explore counseling. It would look completely different based on our relationship now. But with my ex, he just up and left. And it's so interesting because I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but I feel like it's pretty normal to, and my mom and I joke about this because we catch ourselves doing it still. But if you see that somebody passed away on Facebook, Or if you hear something, oh, this pastor passed away or whatever, you like immediately look up their obituary because you're like, how did they die? Like, what happened?
Why did they
Yeah,
die?
yeah. And it happens more, of course, with like younger people who shouldn't die than it does with like elderly. Like a lot of times with elderly, we're like, oh, they were probably sick or they lived a long life or whatever. Like it was their time. But I'm sure you've experienced it with this with your sister, but it's what happened? You know what I mean? I need to know what happened because let's say she had a heart attack or somebody had a heart attack. Oh, that's not going to happen to me. So I'm healthy. And so it's so interesting. It's just so interesting what we do as a society. And so occasionally I make fun of my mom because I'll say something and she's, what happened? And I'm like, you don't necessarily need to know that, but it's such a comfort tool. And we almost think that, not that we don't care for the people who lost that person, but we almost want to protect ourselves from it before we even say, oh, I'm so sorry for your loss, or that's horrible for them, but at least it won't happen to me. We're so quick to do that.
We really are, because I did experience that with my sister's death. Like, she was 30 and young, and so many people before the condolences rolled in, it was the what happened? Why did she die? And it's, I don't know. I wasn't there. I can't tell you the story because I wasn't there. And that made people deeply uncomfortable too. And I think it is that they can't feel protected. They can't feel like they could avoid that outcome in their lives because they don't have the story. And our brains are just wired for a story. I know that too. Even once I found out she died and Faye died, I was like, I needed those whys. And then at the end of the day, I had to sit down and accept that I'm not going to get whys. I'm not going to get the answer. And I think part of it is our medical system making us believe in the fact that everything is curable, everything is fixable. We can treat it, we can change it, we can manage it. So you can continue on living, whether that's a quality life or not, doesn't matter, but we can manage it so your body can physically be here. And like you said, it goes back to that being so deeply uncomfortable with death that we don't even welcome that into our homes anymore. We don't welcome birth or death into our homes like we used to. And I think like we're meant to, because the lack of ritual and the lack of comfortability around birth and death separates us, and we become so disembodied, and there's so much healing that needs to be through embodiment. I think all of my healing has needed to be through embodiment, and spiritually, very little of it has been physical. Yes, postpartum is very physical. After your baby dies, you still have to go through birth, and they come out and you're bleeding and you have to be in bed and all of that stuff. But still, it was like the stuff I was doing for my emotional and spiritual health in that time led to the greatest impacts in how I showed up for my new life after those deaths.
Sure, like leaning into it fully, embracing it as much as you can. Yeah.
Accepting, yeah. And how can you accept it if those around you are avoiding it?
Yeah. And I love what you said about people are not only uncomfortable with like just the grief and just you crying or being upset or not smiling as much, but they're so quick to want you to go back to an old version of yourself that like you can't return to. It's like literally impossible.
You can't, and I have never wanted to.
Yeah.
I feel like I look at that old version of myself and I have so much love and compassion for her, but also that version of me wouldn't survive in the stuff that I've gone through and have to experience today, because I've had to experience my sister's death. I've had to experience my daughter's death to be this version of me today, and to accept those and show up and take that radical responsibility for who I am going to be going forward. I think that so much of my struggle and pain, and not only pain, but my suffering, had been in the avoidance of accepting the new reality. Like, grief and suffering don't have to go hand in hand, they can be two separate things. And I think by taking that acceptance into my grief has reduced that suffering, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think one of the best things we can teach our kids and one of the best lessons we can learn as humans is like just like a resiliency which I don't know. I don't really see that as, oh, pull yourself by your bootstraps no matter what. I see that more as be willing to experience life to the fullest. And that does mean opening your heart up to being hurt, but then also it means opening your heart up to full joy too. Like when you're on like an antidepressant, you can't really choose what feelings it numbs. And so if you're going to numb that, those bad feelings, it also can numb those good feelings. And because part of me still wants to be ignorant, I'm like, oh, I wish I could go back to being naive. But then, yeah, you're right. Like I'm forever changed and I see things through such a different lens now that I don't know. I will always be grateful for even the really hard, crappy stuff because it's given me a completely different outlook. And I think grief really can make or break you. And I think you have to choose at the end of the day what it's going to let, what you're going to let it do to you. And maybe in order to let it make you, you have to let it break you. And just going through all those different cycles. And that's what's so interesting too, is that I think that was so hard for me to accept that it was like going to be a lifelong thing because I wanted to see an end in sight. Like I did want to be like, if I do get pregnant again, that will lessen some of my mysteries or just being uncertainties. And while it did ease some of that, it's like a whole new, it's just added a whole new layer of complexity to my grief. And yeah, just knowing that it's going to be lifelong and that it might mutate is going to be a constant companion and it'll look different. But 20 years from now, I probably will still find myself crying about Lila. That's just going to happen. And that's just a reality. And that kind of, that's scary. Like you said, to really have the sacredness of honoring that life. Like I want to do that 20 years later. Like I still want to find ways to honor her and grieve her because her impact and her life was so big to me. But yeah, you're right. It's so much harder when other people don't really acknowledge that. When I had the hardest time looking at pictures of her, I still do, of us like holding her and stuff. And I'm so glad I do have pictures because some people don't have pictures of their kids from 30 years ago. That was so hard for me. But at the end of the day, I can still look at a picture of her and say, oh, she's beautiful. And there were people at the memorial that couldn't do that. And I'm never trying to make other people uncomfortable. But I'm like, hey, I would really appreciate it if you would look at pictures of my daughter and tell me that she's beautiful and that she was loved and cared for. And it's just interesting what people, it's interesting what people can't do and can't give. And I've had to learn that too. People can't sit right with their own feelings. They're definitely not going to be able to sit tight, sit right with yours. It's if they're not comfortable with themselves, they're never going to be comfortable with all the sides of you. And that's just sad. But I've had to look at different people and be like, okay, like they're emotionally limited in that capacity. But I really do think, and that might be a more on an individual basis, but I do think society is just, we're just stunted in that area. I read a book and it said that they thought that grief and ritual were like civilized out of us, basically. I think that's true. I think we think we're so civilized with our indoor plumbing and our medical systems, but it's, we can't do these basic, in my opinion, beautiful things to honor our dead people. And so it's like, to me, I'm like, that's uncivilized. We can't do these simple things like the home parlor, what you used to call a parlor. And now what you call like a funeral parlor, like that used to be in your home. And that was where somebody in your home would die. And you would likely tend to them in their dying days. It'd be a huge family event. There would be food and drink and flowers, all kinds of things. It'd be a big like honoring, but also a celebration. And you'd probably hold on to that body for a while, even after they passed. But now, like you said, it's everything's moved out of the home. Birth has moved out of the home. It's now typically medicalized. Death has moved out, even just sickness. Like as soon as someone's sick, that's where they go to stay. And I think we saw a lot of that with COVID too. Even just people's wishes were just disregarded. That really is so sad. So many people died alone. And I don't think that's ever how it's meant to be. I don't. I think we're supposed to die where we're comfortable. I think we're supposed to die with our people. And I know, of course, serious accidents happen and you have to go to the ER and everything and things like that do happen. Even as a believer, I've always had trouble with like when they do viewings at funerals, like when they do like an open casket. I've always had trouble with that because to me, I'm like the soul is no longer there. So in a weird way, the body doesn't matter, but it still does. And I'm not sure if I realized that until I lost my daughter and they let me hold her. And that was such a big deal. We all got to hold her, which was really nice. But there was a time where they keep a little cool cot to keep them cool. But there was a time where you basically had to decide that was like enough, like you were okay letting them go, which that's such a hard, nobody can really do that. But they had to do the autopsy And I remember I really struggled with that. And I'm not really sure why, because based on my prior belief that, oh, her soul's not there. So she's already been taken care of. And I guess that did give me comfort, but I still didn't have any control over her body, at least in Texas where I live. And so they basically said, this is your only option. And I was like, you mean I can't leave with her? I can't take her home. I can't decide on my own terms what to do with her body. And of course, later on, we could make cremation decisions. But they were like, no, we have to take her. And we don't even have an autopsy unit here in town. So she had to go to Dallas, which is about 6 hours away. So just that thought of like her leaving so far away and me saying goodbye to her right then, she was never going to look like that whole or that real again. And that they were going to like tear her apart. It just, I don't know why it bothered me so much, but it really did. And so it did. It gave me a new perspective of honoring the body, even though the soul is not there anymore, and still honoring what we, like the physical representation of what we saw with them, if that makes sense. And yeah, it's just given me a whole different look on all of that. But even then, you go to the medical system, and I'm not saying that I necessarily regret anything, but going into the medical system, you just lose all these rights. Whereas if I had maybe waited at home and let her pass on her own at home, which when she was born, I thought she already had passed, just like my mother's intuition told me that. And so maybe we would have gotten some more time with just her and us without even having to like think about all of that. But we're so ingrained to, oh, something's wrong, call 911, or something's wrong, let's outsource, or something's wrong, they can fix it even. And they weren't able to save her. And but yeah, it was really hard for me to lose control over her body. And I think that does happen. I think once you enter into the medical system, even as a sick person, you can't really, and we really probably should know our rights in every state, but a lot of times you can't just be like, oh, I'm gonna take them back home. Like we're gonna do like a burial at home. They're like, oh no, we can't do that. We like can't release the body to you. I think that's usually what happens. But yeah, one of my favorite scenes in a movie is Little Miss Sunshine. And I think I talked about this in one of our groups, in one of our group meetings, but like while they're traveling for like dance competitions, their grandpa passes away. And they're like, oh no, you can't take him. Like, you have to have the funeral here and you have to bury him here. Like, they're not even in their home state. And they're like, no, like he wants to go home and he has a burial plot at home and we want to do a funeral with his friends and family. And they're like, no, we can't release the body to you. And it's a very dark humor movie and even scene, but they're like, wrap him up, let's put him out the window. And they like put him in their car and take him home. It's quite hilarious. But I remember thinking that in the moment, like I was like, Mom, just wrap up Lila and we'll take her because I don't want them to have her. So yeah, just that. And of course, all the people in the medical system were super nice and they were sad for us. But it was like they didn't, and they might have to separate themselves from it to get on with their life and their day. But it was just like this weird not sacredness of life because we have to take the body and all, there's all these legalities that that become paperwork.
The system has to answer to the state before they answer to the human, even though there's humans living within that system, right? Even as a birthing person, if you decide to go into the hospital, you do lose a lot of autonomy over your body because they have to do things by a certain protocol. And so if you enter that as a sick person, it's the same thing. And I experienced something very similar in a different state, but I think it is most states, like you can't travel with a dead body. There has to be a person, like I think it's a coroner that has to travel with the dead body. It can't be yourself, even if it's your baby, even if it's your person. It doesn't matter. And we do lose a lot of rights, a lot of autonomy over what happens to ourselves and the people that we love within the system. And I do agree, like you said, like there is a time and place the system is wonderful for emergencies, right? We have come so far in that realm. And there's so many incidents that we have gone so backwards. We are losing so much more than we are gaining when it comes to quality of life and quality of death. And people don't like to think of death can be quality, but it can. And it actually should. There should be a lot of honoring. There should be rituals. There should be, I think it should be done at home, right? Like, why would we want to sit in a cold room that is not comfortable? It's not our normal stuff. It's no one that we recognize caring for us. And we don't even know how to care for our sick people anymore because we've outsourced that so quickly. And I think that's where a lot of this uncomfortability with death comes in because it's so outsourced. It's all outsourced. So how do we talk about something that we've never witnessed? How do we talk about something that we've never experienced when before children, people of all ages have experienced life and death. They've experienced birth in their home. They experienced death in their home, and it was normalized. And then we could talk about it. We can support one another and really show up for each other. But when it's outsourced, and all of a sudden mom and dad just show up at home with a new baby that came from nowhere, imaginably, like, how do you reconcile that?
Yeah, it's a lot to make sense of. Yeah.
And then same with death, right? Like all of a sudden mom and dad leave and dad doesn't come home.
Home. Yep.
It's what the hell just happened? And how can we reconcile any of that when it's not something that we get to witness?
Yep.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't know what the answers are. I don't even know how to end this conversation. I just think that it's something that needs to be talked about more, and
Yeah.
we need to raise our children in knowing about birth and death because they are so intertwined. They are one and the same. Whether or not a physical being dies, they are still in the same because you are birthing yourself into a new being as well. So the old you dies. And I think even normalizing that partum can be a lot easier. The transformation into motherhood and accepting that I am different. I'm going to show up different in my life. Now, maybe the people who can't accept the new me are going to change, and my role in their life is going to change, and I'm going to lose some friends, but I'm also going to gain some friends. I'm going to gain this. And just talking about it in a more of a candid way rather than just pretending, oh, you changed. Maybe you should look into some postpartum anxiety or postpartum depression medications. And in reality, maybe I'm just fighting that change, and I don't have a space to honor it. And so it's really hard to identify what's normal and identify what I need to support myself and my family in that journey. And same with grief. I know I countless people like going into just the yearlies, whatever, and being like, can you fill out this 10 question survey about anxiety and then the 10 question survey about depression? And I declined every time. I'm like, no, because you're going to tell me I'm anxious and depressed, but I'm really grieving, and it's different. And having the wherewithal to identify when which is so important because we can get the proper support rather than just covering up those symptoms with medication that, like you said, can numb every aspect of our life. We don't get to choose what it numbs. And I think when we decide to avoid certain parts of our life, like death, then we decide to avoid fully living and fully showing up for each other.
Yeah. It's really interesting that you bring up those questionnaires because even like the ADHD ones that they give you, it's just, in my opinion, it does not take into account your child, your relationship with them, your daily routines. It's such a, if you answer these and six of them are true, then you have ADHD. And it's just, I
What
don't
did
think
you
you
eat for
can just,
breakfast?
yeah, I don't think you can just make everything like a checklist and then it's okay. Then, yeah, you have this diagnosis, you have this diagnosis, or you don't. And then let's just medicate everybody. It's such an interesting way to approach things. And you see this a little bit with the anti-aging craze too. And I'm not even sure when that started really. I think there's always been some weird things, especially women-wise, like with women that we fight our natural like beings, like just like the anti-hair campaign and the anti whatever. And I think everybody can have different ideas about it, but we didn't know that cellulite was something gross or to fear until a magazine told us it was. But we're so scared of aging and we're so scared of death. And I just don't like I'm not of the belief that like death is the worst thing that can happen to you. And that's really controversial. I can sit here and say that the NICU has saved so many that probably wouldn't have been saved if we didn't have the NICU. But I think a lot of people will tell you to look at people's quality of life. Like, what does quality of life mean? What does it look like? Our longevity has maybe increased. Like, maybe we'll live until 89 or so now. But that probably means we're on five different medications and we can't sleep and we can't see our kids and we can't breathe or we're going to the hospital all the time. And so it's just interesting to me because I just don't know if that should be our goal to live as long as possible or to look as young as possible, to fight all these things. I don't know. I'm just not, and maybe I'm scared more of being in pain, like being in chronic pain, than I am of death. Death does feel final, but you won't know any different once you're gone. So I don't know. It's really interesting. I think it's something that we really fear for everybody. And that's just such a, I don't know. I don't want us to be scared of it, if that makes any sense. I don't want
Does.
us to be scared of aging. Like, I want to be able to embrace those things because I think, like we've said, if you're able to fully embrace that, I think you can fully embrace living and know what it means to really live if you really know what it means to die.
And I think it's all based on perspective too. We don't know for certain what happens when we die. And when a baby is in the womb, they don't know for certain what's going to happen when they're born. And so it's trusting both of those processes, right? Trusting that maybe death is actually a birth into something else. And what could that look like? We have no idea, yet we've been conditioned to believe to avoid it at all costs, all costs. Even if your quality of life goes down, avoid the death. And it's almost irresponsible to not avoid it, or irresponsible to believe that death isn't the worst thing. And maybe it is once you experience a close one dying, and once you experience somebody that's very important in your life dying, that you realize possibly I get to be with them again. So maybe it wouldn't be that bad. Maybe that's when there's a perspective shift. I think that's when it changed for me, for my sister. And then definitely once I lost Faye too, is, oh, I get to meet that soul possibly when I die. So it feels even less scary. And it feels like something I can embrace and can look at, like actually look at in my life, and even look at for other people too. Like once they've experienced that type of grief, like actually just sit there and hold space without the fixing, without the avoiding.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that because it makes me think like when we're trying to figure out how something is going to happen, for instance, if I want to know, oh, what is birth like or what is breastfeeding like, I'll ask another woman who has experienced it. And she can give me maybe even a pretty good description, but I will not be able to know until I experience it myself. But death is so hard because you can't ask the dead what happened or what did you experience or did you see a light or stuff like that. And I know people have had near-death experiences that come back talking about stuff like that, but again, it's one of those things that you can't really ask for their experience of. So maybe that is why, and that might be why we do have more fear around it, is that we're not seeing it, we're distancing ourselves from it, and that we're not able to, like, as a community, be like, what just happened? Let's talk about it. Or what did that person experience? There's just so many mysteries, or there's so many unresolved things there that just makes everybody uncomfortable. And maybe that's what it truly is just the lack of control. We don't want to admit that we have that. We don't want to admit that we could die later today, God forbid, but it does happen. I do know somebody recently, they were talking about like an AI controlled car, which you can have your own opinions about AI and stuff too. I do think that a lot of technology has helped us, but I think, like you said, we've gone backwards in a lot of ways. And somebody was talking about an AI car. Like, they were so focused on the AI car being able to save lives from people who had died in wrecks. And I just thought that was so interesting. I don't know. I just think we've come so far, like, to be able to be like, oh, we can control that now with technology. Like, we can save everybody.
I
And
think
I
it
just
does
don't
all
think
come
that's how
down to
it works.
control.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting. I don't know, because I'm like, AI is still created by humans. And a lot of times it's based on human intelligence. You know what I mean? So it's all these things that are still flawed that we still don't have control over. And we're like, oh, that will save everybody. It's just a nice little blanket band-aid. And it's just, that's not how it works, I don't think. But
Yeah, it goes back to how can we cover up this symptom?
yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that was the whole thing with like just embracing birth and like all the radical responsibility of what comes with all of that is, if I truly trust birth or life or God, is it only when things go right? Or is it only whenever I define that things have gone right, which to other people would be like a live baby? But it definitely reframed what I thought meant going wrong meant. And if I really do believe in God's will, that means that it's good or bad. And that if I'm trusting his design for birth or his design for life, that's good or bad, no matter what happens. And I don't know, it's so interesting to me. There's such a mystery of a medical mystery. Whenever doctors can't explain something, I'm like, okay, then that's God, right? But then when somebody dies, why can't that be God too? We don't know why. We're not going to be able to sit here and tell anybody why. So I don't know. We really like to exist in this black and white. And I think a lot of it's very gray. I think it
If not
makes other
all,
people.
it's probably all gray. And we just like to pretend some is black and some is white until we get a different experience and then we switch them.
And the cognitive dissonance is like just, I think it's just a lot for people to take in because I don't think that. I don't know. Like, I think it makes people uncomfortable that I can talk so positively about my daughter's death, if that makes sense. I don't know. Because it challenges what they have thought to believe that, like, you know, if you're a believer and that if you follow Christ, then all these things will happen and bad things happen and God didn't do those things. And it's so interesting because I don't think we serve a God that likes to see us suffer. I don't necessarily believe that. But, and of course, there's that silly everything happens for a reason. But, and like, no amount of good that will come from Lila's death will seem worth it to me. So glad I have our support group. I'm so glad I've met so many people, and it's all a blessing. But it doesn't really take away from the fact that I lost her. But why can't I see all of this as meant to be? Why can't I see all of this as part of the will? I don't know. It's really interesting. It's complicated, but I think it makes people uncomfortable that I like embrace what happened, and that I'm still choosing to live life, taking radical responsibility. It's really interesting. And I don't know why
It
that bothers people so much, but it really does. And I'm not sure if it just is it because it brings to light that nobody has control. Maybe that is what it is. Or that I can say, yeah, bad things have happened to me, but I still believe life is good and I still believe that God is good. And that confidence makes other people uncomfortable. I don't know what it is. I don't know, but
all of
it's really
it,
interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
all of it, and plus, and I think that it's just the a lot of it is just like the cultural conditioning that we get put under that makes it so confusing. And then you add the layer of religion versus just God. Like religion and God coexist, but they also exist outside of each other. And
Yes. Yep.
that's been really important for me to understand too, that some people are really indoctrinated into certain religious beliefs, and that has nothing to do with the God that I believe in. And
Sure.
recognizing too that maybe it's not up to me to label good and bad, right and wrong. It's up to me just to trust and not even trust that everything is good or it's going to be good in the end, but trust that it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And accepting okay, even that could be a goal, right? I can be okay. I can have all these experiences that have hurt so deeply, I don't even have words for. And be okay at the same time. Both get to be true. And I get to have things that feel like complete opposites in my life too, right? Like the duality of holding the right and wrong, the good and bad, the pain and the joy, holding those simultaneously and recognizing that one does not cover the other. I think that's something too that I didn't know existed. I didn't know how to. Didn't even know how to think about that until I experienced these things that did hurt so deeply. I feel like I could talk about this forever too.
Oh yeah, and it's very expansive. Like I mean, after we get off of this call, I'll probably have 15 different other thoughts about it.
Text me then because I feel like I'm not gonna be able to turn this conversation off in my own head either.
It's so fascinating. It's so interesting. Yeah, I don't know. It's like all of us are just trying to, we're just trying to do our best, but we don't want to live uncomfortable lives. So I don't know. I don't want to think about not having control over life either. But I can easily say that does exist. And then I can see how quick other people are to not want you to be comfortable. And what you said, there's a difference between God and religion. And a lot of people use bad theology too to help make everything better. They're like, oh, they just need another angel or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that's not how it works either. But God needed them more than you did. I'm like, I don't think so. The all-knowing being needed them more than I did. I don't think so. But that's
Right.
whatever. It really is. A lot of it really is an exercise. And people are just trying to do what helps them sleep better at night, which is I think that's a sad way to live, personally. But I understand it. And I understand that I always say none of us are immune to the human condition. None of us are immune to that, like that want and that need for control and safety. And a lot of times we'll throw everything else out just to have those things. And yeah, like I've always said that when people say that their goal of a birth is a live mom and baby, I'm like, to me, that's so low expectations for this like transformative experience that you can have. And I feel that way about death too.
I
It's
do too
just,
now.
yeah, it can be so expansive. It can be so transformative. And we've put it in this nice little box and pretend, oh, just tie a ribbon over it. It's all fine. And I don't know. If we don't eat that way, then we won't die that way. And there's our comfort. There's what we're going
There
to
we
go tell
go.
ourselves. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm grateful that we were able to have this conversation and also, plant the seed that we get to change our minds at any point. I think that's also such a freeing thought. If we do have these conversations, that's when we get to really dive deep into what are my beliefs, what do I trust, and how do I want those to evolve? And they get to evolve, they get to change. We get to change our minds, our opinions, and that's a beautiful thing too, because if something stays the same forever, is that even really life either?
Yeah, we're scared of change too. Yeah, we want to be static, complete beings that don't change. Yeah, that's a really good point.
Thank you, Alex. Is there anything that you want to add in here at the end right now?
Oh gosh, I don't think so. I think there's like in the kind of like radical responsibility birth world, there's always like a, oh, we need to get right with death. And they're always like, get right with death. And I think anybody who is experiencing radical responsibility, they do realize that death is an option. That is something that is a consequence of living. But I think as mammals, as people who are trying to survive, like I don't think there's like such thing as getting right with death. So I think that's a really interesting, like I don't want to fear it, but there's also not like a, like we're always going to try to avoid it. Like our bodies are going to try to avoid it. I guess I just like to burst all these bubbles that make people uncomfortable or that people say and they just regurgitate. And I'm like, let's look at that. Let's look at that phrase, get right with death. I don't think you're ever going to get right with death. But knowing that it is a consequence of living gives me comfort because does it make any sense that like it makes life more vibrant knowing that my days are numbered? Yeah, I
I
think
think it
it just
makes
adds
sense.
that complexity of life.
And it removes that layer of shame that can follow a death, especially if there's this quote unquote avoidable reason for that death. I think there's always a layer of shame. And in reality, not getting right with it, but getting comfortable with knowing that's always an option just puts that into light of it's an option outside of our hands. Honestly, death isn't necessarily avoidable because even if it was something that was cured or fixed or treated at a medical place, like we've talked about, you can get hit by a car walking out of that building that same day. And so it's once we know it's an option, we also release the control over it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like almost like a cause of death. Like we're always having to put cause of death on everything, even if they don't know. They can't ever really put, I don't know. I guess they could put like uncertain or undetermined, but like even that cause of death, even if I did know what Lila passed from and I was able to avoid that, what's to say that not something else couldn't have happened? And so it's, yeah, there's no way you can control the entire timeline of a person's life. So yeah, that's really interesting to think about. Because you're right, you could avoid death right there, but you could leave the hospital and get hit by a car right then. I just think that's an interesting way to look at things because I think other people, like you said, the shame, especially with moms who have had a free birth, stillbirth, to anybody else, it's, oh, you chose to have this baby at home without medical personnel, then that's your fault. You know what I mean? So as long as I just don't do that, then my baby will live. And everybody says that. And it's interesting because then that's their narrative that they believe. And so then they had to transfer to the hospital. Like we tell ourselves all these narratives, but they had to transfer to the hospital and they were saved. And so no matter what happens, they're going to believe that they were saved in that narrative and that my baby died because of this. Whereas, and I think I used to even be the opposite, where I was like, oh, that baby died because they were induced. I don't, like, how do I know? I don't know. Maybe being induced led to a cascade of interventions, but I'm not there going, oh, that's what caused their death, because I don't know. Just like the person who is speculating about my loss doesn't know. Yeah,
But it
it's
goes
really
back to
interesting.
the we're still human, right? We can have this conversation, and at the end of the day, we're gonna say something stupid to someone else that's going through grief that we didn't even mean to, right? We're gonna hurt their feelings.
Oh, even somebody who has experienced grief, I'm like, oh, don't say that. You don't want to say that. It is really interesting what we've been programmed to do or say to people, because it is sad, and I don't want anybody to be sad. I don't want anybody to be crying. How much better of it is to, like, just like you said, not even try to fix it and even admit, hey, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm uncomfortable with your tears and I'm sad too. And I don't know what to do and I don't know what to say, but I'm here with you and I'll hold your hand. Like, we don't have to rush it. We don't have to fix it, because I can't. I literally can't fix it. I can't bring them back from the dead. Just how healing is it just to be like, I'll sit here with you in it and just be uncomfortable with you in it, because I know you're if I'm uncomfortable, I know you're 10 times more uncomfortable
Oh, that's a good reminder.
because you're experiencing it. Just sitting with somebody, I think, is just such a big, just that presence is powerful.
Gift. Yeah, it's a gift to a grieving person. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm so glad you had me on and we had this conversation. It was great.
Thank you for joining Begin Again, Mama. I am grateful you chose to spend time with me. I know how busy you are and how precious your time really is. If you like this podcast, I invite you to subscribe or follow on your desired platform. And when you do, please rate and review Begin Again, Mama. This helps me expand our reach. Until next time, remember, each moment is an opportunity to start anew and begin again, Mama.